You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Thousands of social justice activists from across the United States were in Detroit last month attending the U.S. Social Forum. Lisa Moore from Vancouver went to the event as a Spanish-English translator for the National Domestic Workers Alliance. Lisa Moore was an organizer for many years with Mujeres Unidas y Activas in San Francisco. She's involved in various community projects in Vancouver, including providing support for social justice struggles through Rhizome Cafe. Jane Williams spoke with Lisa Moore yesterday, and she began by asking her how the U.S. Social Forum was different from a regular conference.
I think it's different from a conference in that people aren't going to it as kind of like a shopping mall of information to gather, but rather it's delegations from all over the country and some from Canada as well, of folks who are engaged in grassroots organizing of all sorts and are coming together to share news of their campaigns and share the models of how they're organizing, but more than anything, to connect with other groups that are doing similar kinds of work in other parts of the country. So while there are workshops, I think there were about 1,000 workshops where groups were sharing their experiences, there also were about 50 or so people's movement assemblies that were big blocks of time, far longer than a workshop that was just about, that was about skill sharing or information sharing. And these were spaces for groups to come together and build strategy for national action. And that meant linking up struggles that are often local and very isolated from each other. And so in that sense, it was much more than kind of a shopping mall of a conference, kind of networking sort of thing. It really was a huge strategy session. And when I say huge, it was, I think there were about 18,000 people there. And out of the People's Movement assemblies came resolutions on a whole range of issues, from urban housing issues and anti-poverty, land rights and indigenous struggles, gentrification, militarization, workers' rights, a whole range of issues that people were talking about and strategizing about and then coming up with platforms for action. So in that sense, I think it was far more action-oriented than a conference typically is.
So how can it help local organizing when people go back into their local communities after that? How can it help them with what they're doing there?
First of all, it was very inspiring for people who I think in some cases feel very isolated in the work that they do, whether it means that they're working in local contexts where they're up against a lot of opposition or having a hard time mobilizing people or just facing all kinds of backlashes against the work that they do. First of all, just being in a space with like-minded people and being able to engage in discussions that aren't just about defending your work, but are about strengthening your work and making it more strategic, making your analysis stronger. I think that's hugely, hugely important for a lot of people to be able to have that time to take the work to the next step instead of constantly having to fight back and be in kind of an oppositional sort of space. The time that I spent there, I was with the National Domestic Workers Alliance, which is an alliance of 35 different domestic workers groups working locally in New York and Chicago and LA, San Francisco, places all over the country. And so they are a good example of how when people come together from very localized kind of struggles in this sort of space, they're able to share models of how they're doing the work that they do. And in the case of the Domestic Workers Alliance, these are grassroots workers groups who are doing things very locally, like shaming bad employers who are withholding wages or picketing outside of people's homes who are not paying their care providers or house cleaners. So they're doing that kind of work and can share with each other strategies for how to do that better. But they're also able to discuss how to link those kinds of local fights to statewide strategies. And in the case of the domestic workers, they're working to pass domestic workers' bills of rights in New York. They were just successful in passing one. And groups in Colorado and California are now following that example and trying to get bills of rights passed in their states. They're also working to try to get the Department of Labor in the United States to modify regulations around workers' rights protections. So I think for these groups, oh, and they're also working internationally on the UN level to try to get a convention on the rights of domestic workers passed. So as a domestic worker who spends, you know, 6 days a week cleaning houses in New York or in Chicago or in LA, to be able to go to the social forum and take a step back and look at the very, very localized organizing, but also come back with all kinds of ideas of how that organizing can fit into this sort of bigger picture of struggles on a state and national and international level, that's an amazing opportunity.
Now, you went as an interpreter for the National Domestic Workers Alliance. How many languages were the meetings in?
The Domestic Workers Alliance was having their national congress at the same time during the social forum. And I think that a lot of other national groups like them were similarly doing that. So taking advantage of the space that was provided and the resources and the fact that a lot of their members were going to be there to simultaneously do their own internal business and then also insert themselves into the social forum by leading workshops, by facilitating people's movement assemblies and doing that kind of work. So the Domestic Workers Alliance was doing its own internal business in about six different languages simultaneously. And when they were presenting workshops, the workshops were also being done in multiple languages.
What happens when groups work across languages like that?
I think that the exciting thing about these groups is that they really are building real multiracial alliances. And that doesn't just mean, for example, Latino groups reaching out from time to time to Black workers groups, or, you know, it doesn't mean sort of showing up for each other's rallies or issuing statements of support. It means really working together in a way that is around shared struggles and finding commonalities of interests. And so that means that these meetings need to be done in multiple languages. It's just a fact of that kind of organizing. So it means that immigrant women domestic workers, for example, or migrant women domestic workers are able to expand their analysis to see how domestic work is linked to the legacy of slavery, for example. So it means that the analysis gets broadened when people are working in truly multilingual spaces, and it means that the organizing is stronger in that sense. It also means that certain power dynamics are challenged about what languages are valued and what kind of space is made available for the speakers of particular languages. So the Domestic Workers Alliance had simultaneous interpretation in five different languages in all of its sessions. And so that means that kind of the burden of understanding is placed on everyone. It means that certain speakers are speaking in Spanish, certain speakers are speaking in Tagalog. Whoever is not a speaker of those languages is listening through a headset, and it all happens simultaneously. So it's a conversation. It's not sort of, you know, kind of like an administrative burden. Oh, wait, we need to stop and interpret that. Or, oh, could you get someone to say that in English instead? It's about building a space where everyone is able to participate on equal footing.
Now, I understand that radio played a part in facilitating the multilingual communication. How did that happen?
Yeah, that for me as an interpreter was something that was really exciting and something that I think that a lot of organizers who care about language justice and language access were excited about, because we for years have used either consecutive interpretation, so someone speaks and then interpretation is provided, or we've used these very expensive little headsets that allow simultaneous interpretation to happen. And so a lot of groups will have a set of those headsets, but because they're very expensive, they will have maybe 25 receivers or 50 receivers. But here we were in the context of the social forum where there were 18,000 people, And some of those people were bilingual in English and Spanish. Some were speakers of one or the other of those languages, and some were speakers of other languages beyond English and Spanish. So the challenge was, for something like a plenary, how do you make sure that all of those people can be receiving interpretation? And so some people who are called the Intergalactic Interpreters Collective came up with this really amazing way to make it possible for everyone to be listening, yet not astronomically expensive, because there's no way anyone could purchase enough of these little receivers for it to work. So they created something that's basically like a little radio station in a suitcase that allows an interpreter to be interpreting into a headset, and everyone else to be listening using little, tiny little portable FM radios, which are way cheaper than these receivers that we had always used. So it meant that in a plenary with, 12,000, 10,000 people, there could be 5,000 people all listening to with their little radios set to, whatever frequency was determined to be the right frequency that wouldn't interfere with local radio stations. And it makes it way more accessible for groups to be able to use that kind of technology.
So what comes out of an event like this when it's all over and all the 18,000 people go home? What's the result?
I think there are a lot of different results. One is that groups come out with, as I said, a lot of groups who use this as sort of a national meeting space. They come out with their work plans defined and their priorities defined for the coming two or three or however many years. So people go back to their local context with a very clear idea of what they're working on and how that ties into to others' work in other places. I think it also, though, as a really grassroots convergence, it pushes the boundaries of a lot of sort of established movements. Like, for example, in the case, again, I'll use the domestic workers as an example. They were able to use this experience to bring together a Congress of Excluded Workers, where they were in conversation with farm workers and guest workers, people on temporary work visas, formerly incarcerated workers, taxi drivers, so people who are all excluded by existing labor laws and who unions have under law, they're not even allowed the right to collectively bargain, and unions haven't really been able to make inroads into those communities. These workers have been able to come together and share some strategies for how to push the labor movement to support their demands for labor protection. So in that sense, it's sort of, not only do people come out with better clarity of what they're doing and how to do it better, I think it pushes everyone on the left to really listen to the grassroots and take direction from communities that have been excluded.
Jane Williams spoke with Lisa Moore yesterday. Lisa went to the U.S. Social Forum as a Spanish-English translator for the National Domestic Workers Alliance.